better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast. Busch Light Apple, the newest beer in the Busch family.
Guys, I've been listening to y'all since this show aired.
When I turn on the Morning Rush, I want to hear Ty at his best every single day.
There are people that have saved up all year and done whatever it took just to get a ticket, just to get a glimpse at the Razorback.
Ty, fortunately, has saved the world and not yet procreated.
This is the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast.
The burning basketball question that you've wanted to know for quite some time has still yet to be answered. Now, Isaiah Joe was not at practice at the team's first workout on Monday. This was confirmed by basketball SID Mike Kaywood through Whole Hog Sports that he's still pursuing his NBA dream. Many people were expecting him to be there at that. He wasn't, and then he wasn't in the video that Arkansas basketball released on social media yesterday. So you're still wondering, you're still waiting, you're still hoping that Isaiah Joe ends up coming back to Arkansas, but it's still up in the air to this point, at least to public knowledge. Now, there might be a private decision made behind closed doors on what he's decided to do, but to this point in time, you, as an Arkansas Razorback fan, do not know. Now, you might have an educated guess, you might be leaning one way or another, but we do not thoroughly know what Isaiah is going to do with the rest of his basketball career. This is the Morning Rush. He's Tommy Kraft. I'm Ty Richardson. 877-377-6963 is the number to call or text in. We are always streaming live on hitthatline.com. You can find our video stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. If you have a smart speaker, just say play ESPN Arkansas. We are also on the TuneIn app as well. We're going to talk basketball with Kevin McPherson coming up at 7:15. And then also former Razorback tight end Ben Cleveland, also part of the Springdale Five, is going to be joining us at 8 o'clock this morning.
So Ben, just real quick, 06, never forget it, when he caught that football and that went over Alabama, they threaded that needle down there. I was standing on the sideline as that game went, and Lee Tiffin missed those kicks, and
all four of them.
That's a moment I'll never forget being there for in person.
So I think that's going to find its way into the highlight clip on his. I have a hunch that that's going to make its way. But one of the best plays, and last time you beat the Alabama Crimson Tide before old Nick Daddy Saban arrived. Yep. So we're getting a chance to talk with Ben about that. Springdale Five. I think a Houston Nut Gus Malzahn question might come up as well. We'll dive into all of that. But starting with Isaiah Joe this morning, not at practice, as I mentioned, Kaywood saying that he is exploring his NBA dream, and I know you got some special treatment as a season ticket holder last night here at the radio station that you heard from Eric Musselman. What you told me when you called me last night is you said of the hour-long conversation that you had with Eric Musselman, the assistant coaches, and the different season ticket holders, not one question was brought up about Isaiah Joe.
Conversations go two ways, and I didn't get a word in edgewise. It was a Zoom call that, as season ticket holders, you got to watch if you signed up for it. I don't know how many people were on it. I just thought it'd be neat to watch. I had an hour of sitting in the car while I was waiting on a kid to do a martial arts class. So I thought, well, what the heck, I'll log into this and watch while I'm sitting in the car. And Miss Danielle kind of hosted it. She was the anchor. And Clay Mosier, the new associate head coach David Patrick was on there, Corey Williams, and of course Eric Musselman was kind of the star of the show. And throughout the call, I don't think the name or the words Isaiah Joe came up in the call. So that kind of caught my attention as they went through just conversation, took questions. That wasn't really part of the conversation. Now, was that intentional? Was that just the way it worked out? Was that part of the plan? Is that code? Is that to tip their hand? I don't know. I don't know what to read into that. I'm just telling you that's what I heard last night in this Zoom meeting, this Zoom call that was designed for people that have already renewed their season tickets. There was an early deadline of last Friday, the 17th, and if you renewed by the 17th, you got a special invite to this call for last night. That was an hour long. So if you did that, that was kind of your bone. That was the prize or the reward they were throwing out, the carrot they were dangling to sign up early. So we laid out the credit card. We got the tickets by last Friday, so we got the invite. So
did you use his salary over there?
Yeah, I mean, Jenkins, we got to talk after the show. So yeah.
That's
so
tough.
But we got basketball tickets.
Yeah,
now.
Yay!
Yeah, you got basketball tickets.
Meant to pay you in basketball tickets.
That's fair. That's fine. I'll accept that.
I mean, depending how
that's a fair trade.
Depending on how good this team could be, that could be quite an investment in your favor.
You because you were
could be
you were getting him football tickets, weren't you?
Yeah, you've got all the football tickets.
Man,
so. The non-conference tickets.
They don't exist. So that's tough on that. But I think, again, this is the number one singular top of the line most wanted question in Arkansas sports right now. Well, I say that I think people are a little more curious about what happens with football season, but definitely on the basketball side of things, this is the question everyone wants to know. And you say, well, I really want to know about the freshmen. I really want to know who's the starting lineup and stuff. But above all of that, you want to know what Isaiah is going to decide this upcoming season. And you hope he comes back to Arkansas, but I need to stress this. If he decides to go to the National Basketball Association, you should be just as happy as an Arkansas fan than if he was decided to come back. I know that's kind of hard. That's tongue-in-cheek me saying that, because you're going to be a little more elated, a little more excited if he elects to come back to school. But there should be the same amount of applause, the same amount of gratitude, the same amount of appreciation shown on social media based on what he has done the last 2 years as a Razorback. And I just want to make sure that's clear, because I think sometimes people get angry and frustrated when a kid decides to leave early, regardless of sport, and that's his decision. That's something him and his family are going to sit down, have long talks about. He's going to have talks with Mus about it, who's been through this process multiple different times with certain players, has been on both sides as an NBA coach, as a G League coach, and not just both sides, so many different angles that he has as a college basketball coach. And so you like that he has that background in him. And it just seems like, for all intents and purposes, that Isaiah comes across as a pretty well-smoking, smart kid. I mean, I have press conferences and stuff, and I knew a buddy or two that went to Northside, and they had nothing but good things to say about him. So,
yeah. And see, that I've got this other side of me that you just don't have built into you, and that's I'm a Fort Smith guy, and I want to see another Fort Smith guy do well. And he's already done well going to Arkansas, but you know, to say and to be able to turn on an NBA game and see potentially a guy from your hometown have success in the NBA is something that I think anyone from, I mean, if it was Little Rock, I mean, when Joe Johnson was playing, you took great pride in that. Or if it was in a Major League Baseball game and there was Cliff Lee, or I mean, you know, I don't know how
there's
much
a reason Darren McFadden is my
right
favorite.
I didn't get to that, but that's a good point. Or I mean, I know Sidney Moncrief's a little before your time, but
just a little.
But if someone brought that up to you about, I mean, what, your hometown, I mean,
yeah.
So I mean, I think when you look back I mean, I think there's some source of pride if you're from a town where someone does something great that you want to wish them well. So I don't really, I mean, I know who Isaiah is. I don't have a personal relationship with them, that family. I don't know them, but I want them to do well. I want Isaiah and that family to do well.
Mm-hmm.
And selfishly, I want him to play another year, because the team we root for, the team we want to do well, will do better with him. But there's another side of me as a Fort Smith guy that I just want the Fort Smith guy to do good.
And
I want anybody from my hometown to do good.
It's like Ron, and you're mentioning before my time. I know Sidney's a little before my time, and Ron's a little, not a little, just a little. It's
I was
like,
in diapers when Ron was playing.
I mean, so that's a little bit, but like for the Fort Smith people listening, or for the Harrison people listening, hoping that Gabe Husky does good, or for hot, I'm trying to like,
well, they tell you, go. For instance, Harrison takes a lot of pride in Brandon Burlesworth and his legacy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's one way to translate
who's
that.
I'm trying to think of, like, who's Hot Springs' big dog for Arkansas.
There's probably a lot of horse racing ties that, you know, anytime you have a, for Hot Springs, I would think that would be a lot of it. Anytime you have a champion at Oaklawn, you know, whether it's an Arkansas Derby champion, you want that horse to go on and do well in the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast. It's like the sound of refreshment meets the taste of the orchard.
Everybody staying home. Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three. And nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hogs!
already got a text in from Brandon in Paris. His comment is, I believe all coaches should take a pay reduction with a caveat that at least some of the money saved should be put towards hiring more medical staff or financing medical supplies such as testing for COVID. Wouldn't this be an investment in their future? I'll let you take that
first. It's always easy to say somebody else should take a pay cut. Maybe you're right.
I would ask Brandon if he has he taken it that, and I would flip that back on to him. Has he taken a pay cut?
Listen,
I think that's an important thing. If like
it's easy. Listen, when you're making $2.5 to $3 million a year, which is what the head coaches in the basketball and football program are making, they're easy marks, and I get that. And listen, when it's time, because last week Hunter Yurcheck let us know that $41 million of their $120-some-odd million budget, $130 million budget, is tied up in salaries. That will be one of the first places they start cutting. One of the first places you have to look are at the high salaries of head coaches. It's unfair to start cutting people right away, first off the bat, that are making $30,000 and $40,000 a year.
That's
first of all unfair, and it's a bad look. So, Brandon, that's one of the things that I think would be on the table when it comes to that point. Now, whether or not your second point, reinvest it into medical personnel. Question is, what do you do as a league? Because to me, that's why you're in a conference. It partly is how do you, as 14 member institutions, investing that together? Do you want 14 schools doing their own thing? I think your point's valid, and I don't think that's a bad idea at all. To me, that's something I think you need to have at a conference level, conversations about what you do, because I don't think you need 14 independent studies. I think you need one conference having conversations on that level. So I don't think that's a bad idea. I just don't think that's – I don't want Vanderbilt, Arkansas, and Texas A&M, keep going down the list, all doing their own thing on that in that regard. If you're talking about research and trying to find ways to mitigate, or I'm not sure exactly what you're driving at. So
okay, so on that note, you mentioned the 40-plus million that's tied up in salaries for the University of Arkansas, or the athletic program that Hunter Yurcheck mentioned on the Zoom conversation last week. So do you anticipate that those cuts are going to happen, or are they going to be
Based on what? Give me the scenario.
That's a good point, too. All right, let's say have football.
If they have football and they have 12 games, no, there won't be cuts, because depending on how many – right now they've sold 31,000 seats. They can – I think there will still be some cuts in some areas.
Okay.
Now, they've already been able to reduce some expenses based on the amount of travel required for recruiting, and they've replaced those with Zoom and some other expenses that aren't as high as the travel costs there. Some of the sports that didn't have to travel, there's been some savings in those regards. I am sure that internally they have found other streamlining measures to reduce some cost. Those are marginal savings. I'm sure there's been freezing hires and some things of that nature as people have retired or positions have come open.
Not spending the money on recruiting, doing the virtually, stuff like that.
Some of those have probably provided minimal cost savings. One of the issues they have right now, and they've budgeted this in, though, is they've only sold 31 or so thousand season tickets. They need this program to be selling twice that amount of tickets. You're not going to have as many concession sales. You're not going to have as many merchandising sales. You're going to be losing money with your partner with Learfield IMG on the marketing and all the advertising sales within the stadium, the programs, all those things that you have a contract with them on. There's going to be some issues on that revenue somewhere down the line. So there's going to be other sources of revenue that are going to take hits as well.
So I have a question on that. So IMG, and I'm forgetting the figure that they signed with the University of Arkansas, they re-upped the contract again. Does that change because of what's going on? Did they have to reassess and renegotiate what that contract is? I haven't heard anything about ESPN or CBS renegotiating their contracts with...
I'm not sure what the language of that agreement says, or if they just have to eat it, or
is there a pandemic involved?
I don't know what the exact language is as far as force majeure in this type of situation, but you think about the situation at Arkansas, I'm sure it's repeated many times over for a company like Learfield IMG, who it would have a lot of difficulty selling the ribbon board advertising, the ads in the program, you know,
relative to years past when full stadium,
exactly,
and stuff like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, signage around the stadium, event marketing. It just keep going on. The ads on the network broadcast. I mean, we understand very well the difficulty and the challenges of the radio broadcast advertising that's out there right now. So we feel that firsthand ourselves in this industry. So, I mean, there's just a lot of challenges right now. So are there going to be cuts? I think even if you play 12 games, Hunter Yurcheck has some challenges. But that's best case scenario. If you play 12 games, I still think there's some challenges he has to face, but they're minimal at that point.
So what does your gut tell you about the University of Arkansas and the athletic department making these cuts?
My gut as a business person tells me that you're not going to play 12 games this year.
Okay.
I mean, does your gut tell you that 12 games is probably one of the lesser likely scenarios?
I think we're inching closer and closer towards 10 and then potentially closer to 8.
And my question then becomes, all right, how does that affect and impact the revenue of your season tickets? What kind of mitigation can you have with your season ticket holders on that in regards to their donations, in regards to how much of a refund you're going to have to give in regards to those revenues? You're going to have an offset in some in cost. I mean, your ushers and your parking attendants and your all of the costs that go into a game day operation will be reduced as well. But, you know, your revenues are going to be down. What kind of deal can you work out as a conference with ESPN, CBS, and your television partners on the league money? How much of a reduction, if any, or can you work that out somewhere down the line on how much of a hit you're going to take right now? I think the biggest problem the league has moving forward is if you're rebidding these contracts, and you know CBS was getting ready to maybe give this up, and ABC was going to step in and maybe pay five times more.
They're going to buy CBS out.
Maybe buy it. Yeah, exactly. And the CBS appeared to be what was a great deal at $50 million or whatever a year. Ooh, well now, if you're ESPN ABC right now, you ready to jump in at, you know, in the deep end of the pool in the current market? It certainly makes those long-term deals look uncertain. So that, you know, if you're sitting here as a league and your question is, you know, what do you do if you're Hunter Yurcheck this year? You know, that certainly makes forecasting your revenue maybe a little more difficult.
Let me play devil's advocate on that note, because I think this is a point that needs to be made. When it comes to television or us at the radio station, I know there's some clients that are apprehensive in buying because they're like, well, there's going to be a college football season.
See, it's the uncertainty, and that's the problem. And, is we're sitting here talking about uncertainty.
And that's fair, but let me ask you this. Do you think more or less people are going to be listening and watching when it comes to Arkansas football this year, based
there'd be more, because I think the apprehension is actually attending the event, not the desire to be
exactly.
I think there would be more people watching because there is a high level of appetite for college football.
Just you're going right
but
down the
there
path.
Is,
I want you to.
There is maybe not quite the appetite to be in attendance because of concerns of COVID.
Just keep talking, because what that means, Tommy, is that while investments in the stock market, whether you're gambling or whatever, there's risk involved, right? Mm-hmm. And so these big-time media companies and clients, whether here at the radio station, here buying television commercials or whatever, they're making a risk, but the payoff is going to be greater because of what you just said. Yeah. There's going to be less people attending, more people listening on the radio, and more people watching TV, which would lead me to believe that you are. It's easy to spend someone's money. I think you always make a good point to say that.
Always easier to spend someone else's money.
But in a sense, y'all, that's an investment that pays off way more than initially anticipated, which are probably, you might even get a better deal, or you might get the same, and you're getting more of a return. Because, and here's the other thing you have to bring up, which you did. There is such a craving for sports right now. MLB starts this week. NBA starts next week. College football starts in week zero, which is the end of August. And then we'll have September 5th, which will be hopefully the first Arkansas game. There is such an appetite for college football right now. It's absurd. We did not have the NCAA tournament, which is my favorite time of year. And I hate that unfortunately was canceled. And so I have been craving college football since that moment. I don't know how many of you watch Hard Knocks on HBO, but they released the trailer with the Rams and the Chargers yesterday, and it got my midsection tingling a little bit. Like, you have to get a little excited about the upcoming season of football based on the fact that we've been so deprived without sports as of late. And so all that tied in together, less fans attending, the appetite would lead me to believe that there's going to, and I don't know the percentage on it, Tommy, but there's definitely going to be more people listening here at the radio station and more people watching when it comes to this upcoming season.
So we kind of veered off the original question. I want to get back to the original question is, what do you do under the scenarios? And if Arkansas has roughly $125 million in the budget to spend, if that's what the fiscal budget is, and we know that Hunter Yurecek said they spend $11 million on scholarship cost, and that's really not negotiable. We're going to take care of the athletes, and their education is going to be funded. That's the number one priority. So you reduce that from your budget, and we know there's $16 million in debt service that's going to be taken care of. So you take care of that based on the projects you've done, the North End Zone, all of those things. And then we know there's $41 million in salaries, and that's part of your overhead. That leaves you with $57 million roughly that I assume goes to just normal operations, whether it's utilities, it's all the things that we normally have in our overhead household, your water bill, your electric bill. You keep going on, the things that it takes to keep these facilities up to date, whether it's grounds, the cost to keep the equipment and all the things. So, how much can you save in those things? So there's a lot of other costs. There's also, I don't know, in that $41 million for personnel cost, if that's just salaries or if that also includes the cost of insurance. Does it also include the tax cost? I'm not sure exactly what went into that number he gave last week and how much of that is included. So clearly, if you have a reduction in games and that reduces the income that's coming in both in TV revenue and also in season ticket revenue, you're going to have to start diving into some of these other costs, and that is going to quickly mean a reduction in staff. Now, you've got a lot of people that work up there and names and faces that many of us don't know and never think about. There's a lot of administrative and support personnel that you don't think about, that you probably don't get to the page as a fan out there and notice these folks in the media guide. If you're a season ticket holder and get a media guide, you may not understand who these folks are and what they do, but there are hundreds of people that work in the athletic department that ultimately Hunter Yurecek's going to have to figure out where do we cut cost. Now, the text that came in, the question was, do these head coaches take salary cuts? I think absolutely. You start looking at your three major sport, and probably four with Mike Nabors taking, the people that are making seven figures have to. It just looks horrible if they don't take some form of a pay cut, and you start cutting people that are making $50,000 or less, and they lose their jobs while the people that are making seven figures don't take a dime.
And I agree.
That's just a horrible look.
What does your check make? Do you know off the top of your head?
It would say, if I remember correctly, it's around $750,000 or $800,000. I don't think there's been an adjustment since he came on the job.
Okay, so there's four.
It's not $1 million. It's less than Jeff Long was making.
Four seven figures. Van Horn, Nabes, Pittman, and Musselman. Those are the only four on campus. Right. All right.
And Yurecek's a high six, but so he's still.
You would anticipate those five. Is there anyone? I mean, I couldn't tell you the level of salary, but I mean, obviously those
senior
five
executives and but all of that's going to be on the table if it comes to that. And it has to be. And that's the correct thing that a lot of companies and Fortune 500 companies and it's all on scale. It doesn't matter if you're a $125 million a year budget, a $5 billion budget, or you're running a $500,000 a year company. It's all on scale, whether you're making $40,000 a year, $400,000 a year, or $4 million. It all works on a scale. So Arkansas is just working on a different scale than most of us work in a year. And that's the difference for most of us.
Your check's at $850 a year.
Yeah. So
FIO8 it. I like that. So for those who don't know, you can look up any Arkansas state employee, whether at the college, whether the public school. I think some people don't know that. When did that come about? FIOA.
Well,
you know?
Long time ago.
Yeah, so the Arkansas Democrat Gazette does a pretty good job of compiling the records of each salary. But you look at those, and again, back to what I originally said, Bob Holt asked Sam Pittman if he had to take a pay cut. No, he said, yeah. I think he said he'd be willing to. And I think he also said that he'd be willing, especially if it meant keeping other sports on the campus. I think I'm saying that correctly. Don't hold me to that 100%. And I think it's important because you and I had conversations, obviously, when we were going through on this and cards on the table. You talked to me about us potentially having to take pay cuts, which I understood. Mm-hmm. I wasn't happy about it, but as a guy that
so far none of us have had to do that.
And luckily, and I was going to get to that. Luckily, none of us has had to do that. I know I've only taken a handful of business classes, including getting a C in business law, but I had somewhat of a knowledge understanding the reason behind that. I would rather get partially paid for a job than not have a job at all in order to get. And I understand that. And I know a lot of you listening right now, you've been furloughed, had to take a pay cut. I've had a couple buddies that have been furloughed, not fired, but furloughed just because of what's going on right now. And it's a difficult time. And listen, if you're not asked to take a pay cut, I'm not going to sit like
no
honest,
one's raising their hand.
Cards on the table. I am not going to ask Tommy, you know what, I'll take a pay cut. Like if he came to me, it's like, hey, we really need this, and he showed me the books, and like I understand. I was like, okay, that's who. But I'm not going to volunteer, especially my salary compared to Pitts, Muss, Naves, right, whatever. It's a different thing. It's a completely different apples to oranges argument. And like you said, I understand the reason, because there's a lot of people at the U of A that bust their butts, especially in the athletic department, and they're not making none of them are making the equivalent at what some of those big time dudes up there make.
But could you imagine? I mean, because the whole world is, if you're a head coach at the Power 5 level, the whole world knows what you make. It's very public. But can you imagine the guilt you would feel? I know I would. If I'm in their shoes, any of them, and I know that everyone in the building knows I make $3 million a year. Everybody knows it. It may not be talked about on a daily basis, but you know it. Everybody knows it. Everybody in the state knows what I make. And they come in and they're cleaning out all of the offensive and defensive analysts. Every one of those guys that made $40,000 or $50,000 a year are fired and let go because they can't afford them anymore. But yet I'm keeping my $3 million a year salary because they didn't ask me, or I didn't voluntarily give up a third of that so those seven or eight families could keep 80% of their pay and have a job. You know how I'd feel like a dirtbag if I at least didn't offer to, hey, I'll back it down to $1.5 million for a while. I'll defer some of my salary out 5 or 10 years or whatever I got to do so these families can keep 80% or whatever the arrangement has to be. I'd feel horrible, you know? I mean,
I would too.
As those people are packing a cardboard box and not knowing how to make the mortgage in 60 days, you know, on the $45,000 a year they were making, but yet I'm going to get my $3 million this year.
And
that I couldn't live with myself doing that.
And on that note, I also have to tie in the phrase you like to use is, it's always easy to spend someone's money. Well, it's also always easy to give someone's money. So we don't have that perspective making that money.
Yeah,
so
I've never made that kind of money.
I can't all the way say that, but I would hope, and I always tell people this, if I ever start making over $100,000, I hope I'm the same person, the same natty light, pizza eating, cheap, frugal bastard that you've known for how many years. Like, I don't want to change, but money changes people. And it doesn't change everyone, but money changes people. But I would hope, knock on wood, that if a situation like this occurred, and we're hopefully, again, knock on wood, we're never presented with something like this ever again in our lifetime, that I would, as you mentioned, take a pay cut in order for someone to keep this job. Because, and now no one listening right now knows my salary, they don't know your salary, Jenkins' salary, whatever, but as you mentioned, they do know Pitts, they do know Muscle,
right?
You can literally look it up. So I don't, and again, we have to rehark on the fact that that Pittman said, if they ask me to take a pay cut, I will take a pay cut, especially if it means keeping other sports. And I know,
but none of us are running down the hall volunteering until they ask
and
us.
And I don't expect him, Muss, I don't expect one of them. If you can get by and not have to make severe cuts, not have people lose their jobs and stuff, just like cut corners in certain areas without having to do it, then by all means do that. No one's asking that to happen if you can get by. But when it comes to people losing their jobs an excessive amount, that's when the situation gets a little hairy and you're kind of debating. It's not necessarily a moral code, but it's like there should be something in your heart saying, even though I think I deserve this, and Pittman's probably deserving, he's like one of the lowest paid coaches, if not the lowest paid coach in the SEC. He probably deserves a little more, but there's something needs to tug at your heartstrings and say, I can't let Jimbo, wherever in accounting, lose his job because I'm making substantially more money.
So to put it in perspective, you put the chart in notes today. You know, nearly half of major college football men's basketball coaches have voluntarily taken pay cuts. You look at the SEC, though. And in the SEC, what is it, three have taken pay cuts?
Three of 14. You got Eli Drinkwitz and Konzo Martin, Lane Kiffin and Kermit Davis, and then Will Muschamp and Frank Martin. So three of the 14 schools have taken a pay cut.
10 have not. One have did not answer.
Yeah.
So
I don't remember who said they didn't.
I think when it gets... And
this was as of last week, by the way. This hasn't been updated.
I just think, and you look at Arkansas, the fiscal year ended June 30th. I think you haven't, you know, Arkansas had the vast majority of the revenues in. They knew what their financial circumstances were. The uncertainties could be shored up with reserves that you are allowed to kind of have on hand and through the foundation. You know, I just think they'll, you know, as we move into this year and some of the uncertainties clear themselves up, they'll figure out what they need to do and what moves they need to make. And if they need to make cuts, I think they'll look at head coaches and go to them and say, hey, here's what we need you to do.
You're listening to the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast. New light lager made with natural apple flavors, available now for a limited time.
The crowd's into it. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ballgame.
All right, let's bring him in. Kevin McPherson at AR Hoop Scoop on Twitter. Kevin, good morning. People are freaking out yesterday when they didn't see Isaiah Joe in the video. I know Whole Hog Sports, you and others have reported that he was also not in the first Monday practice as well. Does that lead you to believe that it looks like he's leaning towards the NBA, or are people blowing this way out of proportion when it comes to his decision?
Well, first of all, I can't blame people. I don't know if they're blowing it out of proportion simply because you've had 4.5 months of uncertainty. And even though there's still uncertainty in terms of an actual season being played out, when you get the coaches and the players and some kind of formal basketball activities back on the floor for the first time since the SEC tournament abruptly ended in Nashville, the magnifying glass is even stronger, right? Everybody, the optics are out. Everybody's paying attention. So when Isaiah Joe's not on the floor since having returned to Fayetteville with teammates, everybody knows he's in that NBA draft pool. But he came back in June with the veterans, been going through strength and conditioning. That's been all been voluntary. You know, the shooting work that they did in the performance center, voluntary, with some GAs in there. So you had, you know, folks knew he was back. As he keeps, I think, he's got one foot on both sides of the fence, right? One considering and weighing his option to return to Arkansas for his junior season. The other foot in that NBA draft pool still with an August 3rd deadline coming up. But to answer your question, I think it's understandable for fans that are hungry for this team to get going. I mean, you've got a top five national high school recruiting class. You've got a top 10 transfer class with these three grad transfers, according to most of the college analysts. And so there's a lot of excitement. And of course, Isaiah Joe's the centerpiece. So I don't know that they've overreacted, but at the same time, I don't think him not being part of this so far in terms of them getting back on the court with the coaches suggests he's leaning anyway. He's got, you know, now 12 more days in this process before that deadline. There's a report that comes out. It comes out for the first time, and this is the Underclassmen Advisory Committee's report. Comes out early in the process, and that's what makes a lot of these underclassmen, when they get that back, actually formally get into that draft pool and declare. The second one of those is just going to be coming out here in a few days, and so that's worth waiting on for a guy that's gone through the process. Now, let's also remember, players haven't been able to travel and meet with teams, work out for teams. There's been no combine. So there's a lot of stuff they've missed. And all of this stuff we're talking about, Ty, this would have already played out. I mean, in a normal calendar, you've already had an NBA draft. We would have known Isaiah Joe's decision back in June. So it's an unfortunate set of circumstances and timing. Yeah, fans freaked out a little bit, but you know what? Let's let him finish his process. I don't know that he's leaning either way, and I think there's a strong chance he still comes back to Arkansas.
So, Kevin, if the next video comes out and Coach Muss is, you know, barking orders at the team in this skills and drills non-contact practice, and there's Isaiah Joe right in the middle of it, we shouldn't also equally freak out that he is coming back.
I think that's true. That's a good point you made. And you know what? I'm not sure if we're going to see him until August 3rd. We might. But I think until that date, or until he announces if it's before that date that he's coming back or going, you know, we shouldn't read too much into anything. And that's a great point you made. You know, I think the fact that he came back to Fayetteville to be a part, you know, he could have stayed in Fort Smith. He has access to gyms and just strictly worked on NBA stuff. I think the fact that he came back says a lot about his intentions, that he, you know, really is considering a return to Arkansas. And I don't think we should take this as him shutting that down. We should take it as there's only a few more days left in his process, and he's got to focus on that for that. Because we know all players want that next level opportunity. If it's the right time for him, he's going to go. But he needs to find out if it is, and to just kind of leave it all behind right now and focus strictly on the Razorbacks, I think would be selling himself short, especially with that second UAC report coming out. That's coming out in the next few days. That's the kind of the timing, you know, as we get to that NCAA deadline. So, you know, but you made a great point there. If we see him in one of these team videos, don't read too much into it right now.
Kevin McPherson with us here on the Morning Rush talking Arkansas basketball. Kevin, that's the biggest question people want to know. But with camp starting this past Monday, what are the other big storylines that you're heavily invested in when it comes to this Arkansas basketball team moving forward?
Wow. There's several. You know, I keep hearing since the freshman moved up at the end of June, I keep hearing about the shooting work that Moses Moody's just opened a lot of eyes. And we knew he was an elite shooter. We knew he was a big-time shooter at Montverde Academy on the Nike EYBL circuit. But I think when you get it up close and personal, here's a guy that's 6'6", still growing, broad shoulders, 7-plus foot wingspan, good basketball player, really high floor IQ, unselfish player, but a guy that sets up as a volume shooter scorer. And, you know, you lose a Mason Jones and a guy like Moses Moody, to me, he's a headliner. I mean, he's a guy that a lot of these early, you know, 2021 NBA draft mocks out there have him as a first rounder, and you could see why. Mm-hmm. And I've just heard nothing but good things about his shooting. I've heard that Vance Jackson's really impressed folks with his perimeter skill. We knew that was a part of his package coming in. But, again, this team, because of the size, I think that's another big storyline. Is this the biggest Arkansas team ever? I know Connor Vanover will be the tallest Razorback to ever play, but if you look across that roster, the size, the length, the talent, I mean, you don't get a top 5 recruiting class and a top 10 transfer class without having a lot of talent in there. The other thing is, we can talk about 10 newcomers all we want, but there's a lot of veterans in these newcomers, the 3 grad transfers, the 3 sit-out guys that have D1 experience and have been a year under Musselman. And, of course, you guys like Desi Seals, Ethan Henderson, that have been through those SEC wars. I think there's a lot of storylines here. I think the talent level, I think there's a reason this team's in a lot of these way top 25, you know, way too early top 25s. Isaiah Joe's a big part of that. I think even if he's not in the equation, I think this is still a team that has a chance to build an NCAA tournament resume.
Kevin, one of the guys that kind of gets lost in the shuffle is Jacksonville transfer J.D. Notte. Now, I was told by several people within the basketball program that he was one, if not the best practice player last year. Some guys are better in practice, they are in games. But do you think we've taken in account enough what he can bring to the table this upcoming basketball season?
Well, that's just it. I mean, I've heard the same things. He had a, you know, he's a 3-level scorer from all accounts I heard, in that he was consistent. But there's a difference between doing it in practice and then when the live bullets, under the lights, yeah, when it matters, we need to see that. But by all accounts, here's a guy they're going to lean on heavily. I think when I look at this roster, I mean, that's another storyline, by another big storyline you could talk about. I think when you look at the roster, you've got 12 guys, in my opinion, at least 12, that could be in a legitimate cases to be in a top 8 or 9 rotation. Many of those can bring starter value. Eric Musselman's a 7-8 rotation, 7-8 player rotation guy. Something's got to give, fellas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as you get bigger, you probably give up some agility and you give up some speed. So you've got to find other ways to overcome that, because as you add size, you generally inherently give up some of that ability to travel the floor with the same speed you've given up. How are some of the ways through these rotations and through some of the things you're going to try to do to still defend the three? Because that's been one of the things he's been really non-negotiable about, is defending the perimeter. How do you still do those things? Because that seems to be the backbone of what Musselman wants to do, is defend the three.
Yeah, and so I've been thinking about that a lot when I started looking at how he built this second roster. Because last year, when you're short on numbers on the front line and size on the front line, you had to play to your strengths. And this is the top 3-point field goal defense, top 10 in the country in turnover margin. So as you get bigger, you may not be able to defend and close out on guys and stay with guys as well in the perimeter. But Arkansas was not very good. We know they were the worst team in the SEC in rebounding. We know that they had a hard time defending the paint. Those things will get better. The thing I like about the versatility in this lineup, though, even if he sticks with an 8-man rotation, is that that rotation might change based on matchups and needs. So I think there's enough in that lineup with quickness. A guy like Justin Smith at 6'7", you know, he's got a 48-inch vertical. That makes up for a lot of problems. And he's quick. He moves his feet. He can defend guards. We know a Desi Seals can defend on the perimeter. We'll see how good of a defender J.D. Notae is. If Isaiah Joe comes back, you know, Musselman raved about his defense last year, and, you know, he can get better there and probably will. But, you know, I think there's enough versatility in that lineup for Arkansas to still be good. Maybe there won't be a ton of slippage in that perimeter defense, but that was a great point you brought up, something I've been thinking about, and we just have to see how it plays out.
Thinking of the point guard position, I was listening to the coaching staff visit with season ticket holders last night on a Zoom call, and when asked about the point guard position, one of the first players Coach Musselman brought up was Jalen Tate. Now, he went through a few other players, but I found it interesting. He spent a lot of time talking about one of the transfer players that are coming in and how he compared to Jimmy Witt. If you spend any time and thought on that comparison and how maybe Tate compares to who Arkansas had as a senior last year in that role.
I've thought about it a lot. I mean, he's a 3-time Horizon League all-defensive performer. He's a guy at 6'6 with good length. We know Jimmy Witt, it's a little misleading to say he was 6'3 because his arms were so long. He really defended like a 6'5, 6'6 guy. I mean, that was a big part of his arsenal. And I just think we saw what Jimmy Witt did. He's not an identical player, but he's not really a 3-point shooter offensively. He's kind of a combo guard like Jimmy was. Jimmy wasn't a true point guard, but I think Jalen, bringing that, coming in as a senior, a veteran at the D1 level, a strong Northern Kentucky program in the Horizon League, you know, there's really good mid-majors out there, and we see when these players come up a level, you know, sometimes they really thrive like Jimmy Witt did. And I think that Jalen Tate, when Musselman brings in these grad transfers, they didn't come in, you know, to have a backup role. They're coming in to play significant minutes, play in crunch time minutes, and bring starter value. So I see what Musselman sees in Jalen Tate. I love his film. But really, there's a whole lot to like about most of the guys as he's built this roster.
Talking with Kevin McPherson here on the Morning Rush. Kevin, when you look at this roster, as you and Tommy were talking about, the height that's been added, whether it's Justin Smith at 6'7", Vance Jackson at 6'9", Connor Vandenberg at 7'3", looking at those, do you think it's more likely that Arkansas will use two big men like a Jalen Williams and a Connor Vandenberg, a Jalen, and an Ethan Henderson? Or do you think they'll go small a lot of times? And I say small being the relative term, but use more forward and guard-only lineups this upcoming season, just kind of off the top of your head.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to see a lot of two-man game. I think Musselman likes versatility. And so a lot of times the guys that can handle the ball and create, you know, like a Vance Jackson, who's really a 3-4 combo at 6'9". So I think I don't know that we're going to see a lot of two big, you know, traditional big guys, but even Vanover's not a traditional big. He can space the floor. He's going to play a lot of two-man game high. Jalen Williams can do the same thing. Would be interesting to see one of those guys playing facing, another guy in the mid-post and working together maybe a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think the options for Musselman, though, I think he's good. He does a lot of things based on personnel and matchups of opponents. So we might see a lot more combinations than we saw last year when he was limited.
So Jeff Goodman of Watch Stadium, John Rothstein of CBS Sports, they have Arkansas slotted at 5th this upcoming SEC season. I've seen 24/7 have them at 3rd. Some other people have them at 4 and 6.
Kevin, if Isaiah Joe decides, you know what, I'm coming back for my junior year, where, in your opinion, should Arkansas be slotted preseason in the SEC?
I think 4 or 5 range is right. I think you get him back. He's way too early, top 25, as I just mentioned that earlier. But, you know, they're probably right. Arkansas belongs in there. And I think, potentially, this is a top 15 type of team. Man, I know it's, you know, we're here I am in July talking about that stuff. And, you know, we could say 10 newcomers all we want. And losing a guy like Mason Jones and Jimmy Witt and even Adriel Bailey, who had his best year as a senior. But the talent's just undeniable, the size and the versatility through the lineup. And I really think, you know, we haven't even talked about guys like K.K. Robinson and Devontae Davis, and I think at least one of those guys is going to have an impact. I just think that, you know, that top 4 or 5 is about right in the SEC, and I think the potential for this team to grow into a top 15 type team is there.
Kevin, the team right now is getting 4 hours a week on the floor with the coaches. They're spending an hour a day, 4 days a week. Coach said they may change that to 45 minutes a day, 5 days a week, and they get 4 hours a week with the trainers. That's about half the time they normally get in the offseason. How big a setback is that in a second year with a coach in a largely overhauled roster?
Yeah, I don't know that it is. I mean, there's certainly some hurdles there. But let's also realize that a lot of programs haven't started yet. Who knows when some of them will. And I think because of Musselman's experience with dealing with roster turnover in bulk for so many years, you know, he's a creative thinker, out-of-the-box thinker on the fly. And I don't know that he sleeps a lot. So I think he prepares for things. He talked about it on that July 1 press conference about having, you know, different rotations and vantage points on his roster based on whether it's Joe's back or not. Granted, that's all on him. Now he's got to that's got to transfer to players. But I think he's been used to doing that for so many years. I think Arkansas might actually have some advantages based on this situation, if you want to call it an advantage, because of Musselman and his staff's experience.
Sunday night he had the team over to the house for dinner. Then Monday night he took the team to Topgolf, and they're doing some team bondings, building some chemistry. How do you think the Topgolf went? What you know these players? Who probably showed out the most at Topgolf amongst this roster?
I have no idea. I really have no idea.
Would have been interesting to be a few bays over and watch this group of guys pound some golf balls.
Yeah, I think so. And you know the thing about of course Isaiah Joe. We've talked a lot about him. Here's a guy that was a good golfer. Yeah, yeah. He is a good golfer. But, you know, I really don't know about the golf games of most of those guys, and I haven't got any reports on that. But I'd like to hear – if someone's got one, I'd like to hear it.
I was talking to my roommate about this last night. I was like, hey, do you know the basketball team went golfing? He said Moses had put on his Instagram story, Kevin, he was making fun of KK because KK was not the best, apparently, of swinging a golf club.
So well, there's golfing and there's top golf. Those are two different things, and top golf's pretty fun. So,
yeah, I mean – you know, and what's interesting in the bonding thing, that's the key, right?
Right. That's why you win.
Guys, some of the playfulness I've already seen on social media seems genuine to me, and I think there's some of the older guys really like what they see in this freshman class. When I've talked to the freshmen who I know, you know, have known for years, building relationship and just getting some nuggets from them about, you know, what they thought about these guys that are coming in as transfers, nothing but good things to say. And I don't think they were just saying things good because they're supposed to. There was some genuine thoughts in those reflections, and I think as they continue to bond, the talent is one thing. I think Musselman will do a good job of building chemistry. I really saw that last year for the most part when he's taken, you know, he's overhauling, he's coming in to a situation where he didn't recruit those guys. So that's an even tougher chore. So I think most of these guys now they're his. I think he's going to help them along in that team bonding, and you know the top golf is part of that.
And one of the things he said was the four freshmen were the last to leave at his house and the last to leave at Topgolf, and they came together and left together, but they were hanging out together and spending a lot of time together as a freshman group. So that's a good sign.
Yeah, and these are in-state guys that grew up playing together. They've built their bonds over the years, and continue to get stronger. And you know it's really. You get four top 100 guys in the same class from inside these borders, and they have familiarity, and they know some of the current Arkansas players, guys like Desi Seals and Isaiah Joe and Ethan Henderson, going back to, you know, before they got to campus. So I think there's some value there. You've got 8 Arkansans on this roster of 13. You know, that's a huge story when you're asking me what are some of the big stories. That's a big one. I think that's unprecedented. And I think that that can help pay some dividends because I think there's some chemistry and bonds that have been worked through before just being thrown together these last couple of 6 weeks or so.
Kevin, and I'll top off the interview with this, man. You bring up the chemistry aspect. I know KK Moses at one point in time played AAU together. Devontae Davis and Jalen Williams were on the Arkansas Wings Elite, and not the Wings Elite, excuse me, the Woods Elite. And so there is some connection, some familiarity, whether it's playing with each other, whether it's playing with against each other. But that's been the question mark, is you have 10 guys on this roster that currently have not suited up in a college basketball game for the Arkansas Razorbacks. Are we overhyping the chemistry issues that might occur based on the past that these guys have actually had in common with each other?
Maybe. And I think chemistry, a lot of that is what buttons does the coach push? What does he know about his players? How does he put them in positions to not only excel individually, but put them in the right personnel matchups and packages? And I think Musselman's very OCD and thorough about that kind of stuff. And I think that helps build chemistry. You know, there's other stuff that goes into that, right? Personalities and locker room stuff and all of that. But if you can have success on the floor and show them how they're going to be successful, and you run your organization like an NBA organization, you kind of sometimes check some of the smaller stuff at the door and go in there and do the work. And I think that's the kind of program they're establishing. We're just now getting into year two, so we're going to see what works and what doesn't. But I think a big part of chemistry is not just the bonding stuff, but also what are you giving them X's and O's wise? Mm-hmm. What are you showing them they can accomplish? Because I think that helps, you know, that basketball language when it's clicking, that can build chemistry pretty fast.
Kevin McPherson at AR Hoop Scoop on Twitter. You can also read his stuff on Hogville. You can read his stuff on KNWA.com, and you can watch him on the Pig Trail Nation. Kevin, appreciate it always, man. Getting more excited for basketball season.
Great to be with you guys, man. It's the time to get excited.
Exactly right.
Thanks, Kevin.
What is wrong with you?
Hey, I want to complain.
I'm complaining.
I want to complain about
complaining.
I want to complain.
It really pisses me off today.
To simply listen to people whine and complain.
I'm angry. I'm spitting angry. I'm like a tornado of anger swirling about. My heart rate is dangerously high right now.
I'm complaining because not enough people tickle, hug, or smile.
I'm so mad I could eat ball bearings and crap BBs.
It's time for What's Your Beef Wednesday.
My dad just texted me and said no on the dog. Well, I'm not living in the house anymore, so I can do whatever I want.
So
I guess he's
I wonder if dad agrees with me if you're ready and responsible enough for another bean to be under your charge.
You know what this reminds me of? You've seen Big Daddy, right? With Adam Sandler and Cody. You remember when they're in court at the end of the movie and the dad is the lawyer fighting against Sandy getting custody of, it's Cole and Dylan Sprouse. I can't think of their name in the show. And then he convinces him. He gives this, like, long, elongated speech about how much he meant to be a father and stuff. And then eventually he's like, my son deserves this kid. Well, I'm going to convince you and my dad that I deserve this dog in a couple months whenever I get around to it. It is a What's Your Beef Wednesday, and it is presented by CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers. Went in last week, didn't get a burger, but I did get a strawberry milkshake, which are off the charts. I'm telling you, if you go to CJ's, I know you're always going to get a burger, you're going to get the fries. Make sure you get a milkshake as well. If you're going to do the whole nine yards, do the whole nine yards. Get the milkshake along with it, and don't forget the fry sauce as well. Two great locations, the Russellville location, the original Exit 81 on Arkansas Avenue, as well as the Fayetteville location on Weddington as well.
Award-winning fries. Won our fry bracket.
They did. They won the finals by 77%. They had 77% of the vote. So congrats to Keith and everyone at CJ's as well. You can order online at CJ or ButcherBoyBurger.com. You can order on the app, and then you can also do curbside at the Fayetteville location, as well as go inside and then go through the drive-thru as well. And then you can order takeout at the Russellville location. The numbers for the Russellville location, it's 479-968-2300. And the Fayetteville location, it's 479-301-2522. CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers. When all you do are burgers, they have to be the best. All right, it's a What's Your Beef Wednesday. You want to fire this one off first?
I haven't done a traffic one in a while, and I've been driving. I went to near Branson last weekend, been up to the river a couple times, and I've noticed this, and this is not a new one, but I haven't beefed on this before, so here we go. When you're on two-lane roads and 412 has several of these, and then you get to a passing lane or you go from two-lane to four-lane, I'm sure you see this going to BB a lot.
Yep.
You get behind a string of traffic, maybe you're five or six deep, maybe you're just behind one car, and you're behind, you know, the guy that, you know, we're going to follow the speed limit. We're 55 yep. and a uh-huh. 55, or worse, we're 47 and a 55. But here we are. The Oasis has arrived. We are now in a passing lane. We are now where we can get around the slow-moving traffic. And now, all of a sudden, the green flag is dropped at the Indy 500. And now the car that has been doing 47 in the 55 is now feeling like they are on the final lap of the Daytona 500. And now they have pressed the pedal to the metal. Does this happen? Is this only a me thing, or has this happened to others as well? Has this happened to you where you're patiently waiting, trying to subside your frustration and your anger, patiently waiting your turn, five back, and you finally get your chance to pass, and the car that's been holding up traffic for 17 miles all the way from Huntsville to Harrison, finally, you know, when we get to the four-lane section, feels like now we're going to do 90. You, sir, have been the problem the whole way.
The entire time.
Why now did you decide to hit the green flag in the Daytona 500? That is my beat.
That's your beat this morning.
Am I the only one that encounters this problem?
You're 100% right.
Good
Lord. I think it's on the way to...
That's my beat.
Is it Hot Springs that does like the 2-to-1 lane when you're coming from Little Rock? Or maybe
yes.
it's from Fort...
Yeah.
Because you have to almost like go like 80 to squeeze by that one person mm-hmm. who's driving that. So I've experienced that as well.
They'll do 47, and then all of a sudden we get the chance to get around you, and now you're going to do 87.
JT says you're completely correct in that line of thinking, Tommy. So I will agree with you 100% on that. So my beat this morning is when we come into the radio station, I get here first in the morning. I'm here about 5 a.m. And I'm very groggy. I'm not really paying attention to much. And for whatever reason, this giant spider outside of our studio has
yes.
decided to make
it's a good one.
His home in front of our door every single day. And we'll destroy the web. And I'm not a huge spider fan. Now, it's not the severity of my fear of snakes. Mm-hmm. Like, if I see a snake, I don't care who's with me. I'm running the other way. But this spider's massive. And I've hit it a couple times. Now, I'm more cautious now because I've done it. But I know you've done it.
Oh, yeah.
And
this is a
it.
Massive spider web. Like,
it's beautiful. It's a great... Yeah.
And it is right in the walkway to come into... the facility here.
And you can't really see it for the most part because it's dark outside when we get here in the mornings, but it is really enraged. Do we need to call animal control?
There is nothing worse than walking into a spider web.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily your fear of the spider getting you. It's just now it's in your hair, it's on your face, and yeah, that is the worst.
And I think when I was a kid, Charlotte's Web was one of the biggest books/movies and one of my favorites, mm-hmm. and I always thought it'd be cool to be able to be a spider and climb on the web, but that just doesn't resonate with me anymore. It doesn't get to that. So, got a couple texts in here that we'll get to. John in Boonville says his beef this morning is not enough baseball on the weekends. Well, John,
That's getting ready to change, John.
So I think you'll be excited about that. You won't have to just go to the Little League games here in Arkansas anymore. You'll be actually allowed to watch the games on the MLB on TV. JT in Hot Springs wants to piggyback on yours, Tommy. He says the cars that are speeding to a hill, that there's a police officer that someone stopped on the other side of the interstate, but they slam on the brakes, even though the officer's on the other side of the interstate. Yeah. So they're scared that this officer is just going to go around and stuff. Yeah. But, yeah, that's definitely one that stands out is when people – that and rubbernecking. It irritates me when people stop and look at crashes.
On a divided highway,
And I get you want to be cautious and stuff, but a lot of times people are just like looking to see what happened, which is really aggravating as well. B in Clarksville texts in. He says it is very terrifying to walk into a spider web in the dark.
It's terrible. And you feel like you need to go home immediately and take another shower. Just take me right to the car wash. Give me a roll of quarters. That's what I need.
Greg in Fort Smith's beat this morning is a lot of people throwing their blue mask on the ground and leaving.
There is a rash of that going on.
So, JT in Hot Springs texts in. He says Highway 70 is now 4-lane for my 30 Hot Springs. So I haven't been to the lake to Wachita or Hot Springs. I think I'm going this weekend, but I have not been out there in a while. So it's been a while. It's like when I come back to Little Rock and there's all these buildings popping up. I'm like, Dad, Mom, when did this get here? And you're just like, because you hadn't been in a while.
Pick it up a little bit. Get your chin up. Smile!
This is the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast.